At this point last year, the Indiana General Assembly was wrestling with some of the most sweeping and controversial education reform proposals in memory. The introduction of merit pay for teachers, a dramatic reduction in teachers' collective bargaining rights, the expanded use of taxpayer-funded vouchers by families eager to send their children to private schools. The list of proposals was long, and so were the debates. In the end, though, thanks largely to the strong backing of Governor Mitch Daniels, virtually all of those bills became law. So, does that mean education reform is playing hooky from this year's legislative session? The short answer, no way. Hi, I'm John Schwantes, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll invite an expert panel to help us examine some of this year's most significant education-related measures. Can schools count on getting an additional $80 million for full-day kindergarten? Should it be easier for the state to take over struggling schools? And will Indiana's public schools soon be teaching creationism alongside evolution? All that and more on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
In Indiana's largest city, there is a park where scientists bring ideas to life, where there is a growing community of like-minded innovators backed by the resources of a world-renowned university, the Purdue Research Park, Indianapolis. The idea economy is here.
Remember the old days when most any discussion of elementary school education focused on the ABCs? Well, this session, it seems, the C's are getting most of the attention. Take creationism, cursive writing, calendars, Common Core standards, and kindergarten funding. Joining me to discuss all those things and more are Republican Senator Mike Delf of Carmel, the author of several of this session's highest profile education bills, Nate Schnellenberger, president of the 50,000-member Indiana State Teachers Association, David Harris, founder and chief executive officer of the Mind Trust, an Indianapolis-based school reform group, and Dennis Ward, superintendent of the Danville Community School Corporation in suburban Indianapolis. And I thank you all for being here. And in deference to my beloved former grade school teachers at IPS School 92 and 106 here in Indianapolis, I do know that kindergarten doesn't start with C. I do know it starts with K, but we'll say that's poetic license.
It's phonetically correct.
All right. Well, I knew you would. I'd find it out there somewhere. Yep. Let's start off with the notion of just how much reform we saw enacted by the General Assembly last session. You know, as I mentioned at the top of the show, dealing with everything from vouchers to expanded school choice programs to collective bargaining rights for teachers. Mike Delf, do we have something of a reform fatigue right now in the State House as it relates to education?
There's no question that we have done a great deal of work to try to reform our public education system. We're trying to lift up high-performing teachers and focus more dollars in the classroom. But we still have more work to do. We still have parents coming to us year in and year out talking about the school day and the school calendar. And then during my series of town meetings that I hosted this past year, this issue of cursive writing popped up, which is very sensitive to a lot of folks that have grown up and lived in Indiana. And so I think there are other issues to deal with. We put out a proposal to try to lift up high-performing schools and school systems, which I think is also cutting edge. But there's no question that there is some educational reform fatigue going into this legislative session.
And certainly we'll be delving into some of those specific proposals, and maybe after the show you can show me how to make a capital Q and a capital Z. I think those are the two letters I never mastered in cursive, but there's time, I guess.
Sure.
Nate Schnellenberger, your notion of reform this session versus what we saw last session, which was really a tsunami as far as you and your membership were concerned.
Absolutely. I think we saw a record number of changes in K-12 education last year enacted by the legislature. And I think from certainly from an educator's point of view, and I believe that administrators feel the same way, that it's there's been so much change that there needs to be some time for us to assimilate all of that change and to deal with it. And I think that it is a time to pause a little bit and let's see how the reforms that were enacted, the changes that were enacted, play out and see where they need to be tweaked.
You know, there were a few proposals this session that you might say built on what we saw last session. Voucher legislation was an example that would have expanded perhaps the program even further, eliminating the requirement, for instance, that students attend school at least, two semesters, I think, in public school before they would qualify for private vouchers. David Harris, you follow reform closely. Was that its apparent defeat at this point a byproduct of fiscal concerns, or was it what we've just talked about? Hey, let's see how these things settle out before we move forward.
I think it really is fiscal issues that drove that, and I think the fiscal issues drove that policy in the first place. I don't think the advocates for vouchers wanted to limit who could have access to it, but you wanted to make it fiscally neutral. But to the point about education fatigue or reform fatigue, I understand because the legislature did so much last year that people are wanting to take a break. But at the same time, if you look at the challenges that we have, we just can't afford to take our foot off the gas. And I really applaud Dr. Bennett and the Indiana Department of Education for putting forward some really significant legislation, specifically around parent trigger, giving parents the ability to convert schools to charter schools if they're not meeting the needs of the kids, and to really strengthen the state's accountability law and extend it not just to failing schools but potentially to failing school districts. I know that had some stumbling blocks yesterday, but those are important ideas, and we need to continue to push forward on all of these issues because the challenges we face are so great.
Well, Dennis Ward, you live this every single day. I mean, are these the kinds of issues you hear parents coming to you with, or are they simply saying, Mrs. Smith has given too much homework on the night of the football game or before, and we can't get it all done? I mean, is it this kind of high-brow discussion, or is it more age-old conversations about what's happening in the classroom?
Well, I think we have to remember that all the research and all the surveys that they take tell us that everyone really supports their local school. So anytime there's a need for reform or a sweep of calendar, whatever those issues are, it's always for the school district 50 miles from here because ours is fine. But I think we also have to realize that we're in a new age where we have to do a better job of promoting our successes and what we do accomplish and do quite well.
So the role is quite different perhaps for somebody in your position in the superintendent's office. It's maybe more parental relations than it might have been in the past.
We get in this issue of local control all the time, and the fact of the matter is Article 8 of the Indiana State Constitution gives almost absolute authority for decisions in the area of public education to be made exclusively by the Indiana General Assembly. Local schools, school boards, all of that are a creature or a creation of statute passed by the Indiana General Assembly. And so this notion that the Indiana General Assembly is somehow stepping beyond its boundaries, I think, is a false one, number one. Number two, when you talk about the control that government has over the family, there's very little that government has more control of than the school day and the school calendar for families with school-aged children. And I think what's happened in that debate is there's been a sense that teachers have been represented by a party, administrators have been represented by a party, and parents have been pushed off to the side. Whether that's true in all cases across the state, I don't know. But that's why people have come to me repeatedly on this school day, school calendar issue. But I think that we want to lift up our schools. We want to be supportive of our local schools. But we also, at the Indiana General Assembly, have a duty and authority under Article 8 of our Indiana State Constitution.
Well, let me ask you that, and I don't want to involve everybody here, but that notion of home rule, which you just spoke on behalf of, and yet you've mentioned two measures now, the cursive writing requirement and what you had wanted to see happen, which it appears won't happen necessarily this session. At least it doesn't look promising for your bill at this point.
Right.
But that's the notion that schools can't start before a certain time in the summer,
right?
Either the fourth Monday, last Monday of the month, or in some cases after Labor Day. Aren't those two issues butting heads? The notion
I'm not saying that home rule is an absolute right. That's the whole point of what I'm trying to say. I'm saying that the Indiana General Assembly, if an issue rises to its attention, we have a responsibility under Article 8 to deal with the issue.
Nate Schnellenberger,
In regards to parental involvement in schools, and you know, I've been an educator for 35 years. I started teaching in 1973, but I've served on many school committees, including calendar committee, but other textbook committees and other committees as well. And almost without exception, there has been involvement, certainly of the administration, of the educators in that school, and of parents, and in many cases of students. So those committees are usually joint committees that are making decisions about textbooks, about the school calendar, and they are locally made decisions. But there is input from a wide variety of groups. And you know, our opposition as an organization with the Senator's bill was simply that. We have no dog in the fight as to when a school starts their school year or when it ends. That's fine with us. But we do think that we would have some, I guess, a difference with that it would be mandated a certain date, and that each school corporation, based on the needs of the parents, of the students, and of the school corporation, would make that decision.
This issue of state control versus local control, I think, leaves out of the equation the most important people we want to have control, and that is parents. And we believe that parents need to have more choice. And if parents have more choice, schools are going to set up their calendar and every other aspect of what they do in ways that meet the needs of parents. And we need to do everything we can to empower parents to be able to make the best kids, best selection of schools for their kids. So as we talk about this, the more we can empower parents by expanding their choices and their power to select schools, the better we're going to end up getting.
Well, clearly there is this tension between home rule and sort of mandates from above. Look at the Common Core standards debate.
And that's another level of government. And if you look at the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, which lists out the 19 or so enumerated powers.
You sound
powers.
Like a guy who just took the bar exam.
Well, I study this anyway because it's a duty that you have as an elected official. But the federal government has no responsibility or authority in this area of education, but yet we keep ceding power and authority to them. And this Common Core universal standard is another example of that. If you look at state constitutions across the country, they all have dedicated articles to this issue of public education, but yet we keep ceding authority year after year to the federal government, and I think that's the wrong way to go.
Let's look at the Common Core standards. As I understand it, and I'm not as versed in this nearly as well as you all are, but I think that states and governors that have come together to find commonalities, including, I believe, Mitch Daniels,
that's right.
Member of your own party here in Indiana.
And I disagree with that. I disagree with us ceding authority to Washington, D.C.
But if in this case, it's other state. The notion that it's Mitch Daniels and 45 other governors.
Yeah, they're ceding authority from the state level to the federal level, where we ought to be the ones that are setting the standards. Whatever the standards are, that's fine. But we in the Indiana General Assembly and the governor ought to be setting the standards for the state of Indiana and not having that decision made by bureaucrats in Washington, D.C.
I think the Common Core example is a great example of how governors have come together without the federal government interfering and telling them what to do, but collectively came together and said, we need to have these common standards so we can measure ourselves against each other so people know how students in one state are doing versus another. And I think it's a great example of how you can make progress without the federal government getting involved.
But the federal government and the Department of Education have been leading that charge for years.
Well, let me get, the person in the trenches here. I mean, do you feel handcuffed by this notion of having a number of states adhere to the same core standards? Or do you find it in some way a necessity in this day and age to know how your students score against their counterparts around the state and around the country?
I think we have to look at what is the bottom line purpose. And if the purpose is to consistently raise student achievement across the board in all locations across the country and across this state, then we have to get rid of the independent contractor attitude that when I walk into my classroom, no one can control what I do. And I think we have to set minimum standards, same as we do with behavior or any other situation in the business world or whatever world it is, and then hold people accountable to meet those standards. I don't see it as a big brother looking down on us. We've already started assimilating that into with our state standards. And in the local level, we feel the same way about state standards as the state would feel about the Common Core. It's someone outside telling us what we have to teach in our classrooms. I don't have a problem with that, and we don't in our school district, because we see the need to be consistent and raise all children's achievement to the highest level possible, and you do that by consistency.
All I'm suggesting is that the standards ought to be set by the authority that's under law, which is the Indiana State Constitution and the state of Indiana, not the federal government, Washington, D.C., and really not the local folks. We have the authority at the state level under law. But one of the other concepts I just wanted to throw out on the table is whenever I talk about educational issues, I always like to talk about Abraham Lincoln in this concept of lifelong learning. Regardless of standards, regardless of authority, regardless of levels of government, we need to empower all people, all students throughout the state of Indiana to firmly believe in this notion of lifelong learning in this global economy. We need to make people adept at changing to different circumstances and changing industry. And so we need to empower people to want to learn throughout their lives and not believe that when they walk into classrooms, when they start, or when they leave a classroom is when they stop.
Now, I'm guessing on that one you'll probably get unanimous agreement.
Absolutely agree.
Let's get back to something where we can have some bickering. I mean, that's more interesting, right? Let's get into a few of the specifics. And we've touched on a few with the Common Core Standards and others. But let's start, as the Bible says, in the beginning with the creationism issue. You've advocated, as some of your colleagues have suggested, that Indiana schools, public schools, should be allowed to teach creationism and other religious theories about the creation of mankind.
First of all, that's already going on in several school systems throughout the state of Indiana. I know Mount Vernon's one of them that teaches creationism as an alternative theory to evolution. All we did in the legislature was to give the authority to local units of government to do that which they're already doing. I don't see any problem with throwing another alternative theory of the origins of life and science out there. If you go down to Kentucky, they have a creationism museum that makes a compelling scientific case for the beginning of the world. And so let the facts speak for themselves.
And at the risk of being flippant, I'll ask you, Nate Schnellenberger, on what day did God create lawsuits? Because this is surely going to end up in court, I take it.
I wouldn't try to presuppose what would happen if that bill passes.
Your membership, it's safe to say, is opposed to this notion?
I've received some comments from some of our science teachers, and myself being a former science teacher, certainly have some, and some of it may be semantics, but I have no problem with teaching about other types of theories. But I would have a problem with teaching them as scientific facts. So I don't think they should be taught in the science classroom, but I have no problem with, just as there would be some curriculum that would deal with other types of religions or other types of cultures, other types of
And we actually amended that bill to include other religions as well. Yes. Senator Simpson offered
There's a long list of them, right, that right. Their theories could be brought up.
John, I find one thing very interesting, though. I saw that the Department of Ed said there's not going to be, they would not develop a curriculum for that, that it should be an issue of local control, that each school corporation should decide for themselves. So we get back to the local control
issue. I guess that's the tension that underlies much of this. David Harris, it's, again, from a reform standpoint and from a perception standpoint, the same day that the Senate endorsed this legislation and sent it over to the House this past week, the relatively conservative Fordham Foundation gave Indiana an A for its science curriculum. I think one of only seven states in the country that got an A. And basically those same individuals from that foundation said, if this goes through, and I'm paraphrasing here, kiss that A goodbye. Because do you worry about Indiana's reputation as it relates to science education and these types of reforms?
Well, I'm more worried about government getting in the business of defining what creation is. There are so many different interpretations of creation, and I think we talk about where we don't want the federal government involved. I don't want government involved in that at all. And the bottom line is really this is kind of an issue that's not fundamental to improving the quality of instruction in the classroom. So when we're talking about the kinds of reforms that we need to focus on what we can do to support great teachers, to bring more autonomy to school buildings so school leaders can effectively run their schools, how we can prioritize our resources in ways that best meet the needs of kids. And this is not an issue that's really fundamental to improving educational outcomes for kids.
Let me just say real quick, there is a growing sentiment amongst many people in the state of Indiana that we've been forcing a steady diet of secular humanism down the throats of all of our young people and our families, and to offer this as an alternative and put the facts on the table and let people make their own decisions. I don't see what the problem with that is.
Well, Dennis Ward, the senator mentioned that some districts apparently are already offering this by their own choosing. Is Danville Schools itching to get into the business of offering creationism alongside evolution?
Not really, but in my career, I've been in school districts that did have it in the curriculum. And I think whether it's there or not, I think the important thing is how is it taught to the children, and is it fair and is it consistent across the board for all theories, not the personal beliefs of that teacher. And that's my concern, is the controversy that this may cause and the complaints in our offices and in Nate's office about this teacher did this. And it's available now, and it can be taught, and many places do, and they do it quite well.
And as we run out of time here, I'm afraid, let me touch, before we go, on another underlying theme. We talked about the tension between home rule and mandates from government above. Money, that's a constant theme, or the lack thereof is a constant theme as it relates to K-12 education. There's a debate right now about how many times school enrollment students should be counted. Right now it's every September one day. There's a proposal to make that 2 days. And again, I'm no expert, but there's a lot of debate about what seems to some to be an insignificant change. Why is that important?
Well, we debate the financials of public education every 2 years when we go through the budget process. And I'm sure next year when we get into the next budget, we'll be talking about all of these financial matters. One other issue I wanted to throw out on the table is we've introduced a proposal. We've talked about underperforming schools for the last couple of years, but we've introduced a proposal to lift up high-performing schools like Carmel and Zionsville and other schools throughout the state. And I hope you guys will give that consideration going forward. That would relax some of the standards from the state and give you more flexibility and local control.
I think the multiple count date is really important. One, we shouldn't be sending money to schools to educate kids that they're no longer educating. And if those students have moved to other schools, those dollars should follow to those other schools. But we also need to create as many incentives as we can to make sure that schools are keeping kids in schools. We obviously have a terrible dropout rate in this city and in this state, and we need to create incentives for schools to keep kids in. And one way to do that is to financially penalize them if a kid drops out of school, so that they're doing everything they can to make sure kids stay in school.
We found one area of agreement. As we close out this segment, we're going to find one more, I bet. $80 million has been earmarked in some legislation for the funding, increased funding of full-day kindergarten. I'm guessing you, Nate Schnellenberger, and you...
100% support.
100% support?
Support it, but realize that in all districts, that doesn't mean it's fully funded. For us, it's close, within $200. Some districts, it's still several thousands away from being fully funded.
So money will continue to be a front burner issue this session and certainly next year during the budget session, as you pointed out, Senator. Good discussion. I appreciate all of you being here to talk about some very important issues facing the state.
John.
Again, my guests have been Republican Senator Mike Delf of Carmel, Nate Schnellenberger, President of the Indiana State Teachers Association, David Harris, Founder and CEO of the Mind Trust Advocacy Group, and Dennis Ward, Superintendent of the Danville Community School Corporation. It's costing more to learn more at Indiana's colleges and universities, keeping higher education affordable on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, and I'd be remiss if I didn't point out also publisher of the newsletter Indiana Education Insight. Last week, as you were sitting there, you predicted correctly that the right-to-work legislation would be done before the Super Bowl. It was signed Wednesday and is effectively off the table. Not to mean the controversy's gone, but legislatively it's off the table. Does that mean now that the spotlight shifts to education, which there are some interesting bills out there this session?
Absolutely. And it may be a spotlight that not everybody's comfortable in having on it, given some of the high-profile issues and areas that some people would prefer the state not even be legislating in. But there aren't a whole lot of other issue areas that have as many controversial kinds of items coming up in the second half of the session as education.
Well, you mentioned some of the controversial ones. I mean, creationism probably... We already have the Indiana Civil Liberties Union saying that it's unconstitutional. The challenge, the likely court challenge, is obvious, it seems to me, if this were enacted. What do you read into some of the bills we're seeing coming out of the Senate, particularly?
That's the interesting aspect, John. They're coming from the Senate this time instead of from the House. We've become accustomed over the last few decades to seeing that the Senate be what the founding fathers of the United States kind of intended, with the U.S. Senate being the saucer into which you pour that hot water to let it kind of cool before enacting something. But it seems like a lot of the hot button issues this year are coming over from the Senate to the House, and that's a change that we're not accustomed to seeing.
And you have an interesting division here. You have the Republican governor, Mitch Daniels, on one side, and some of these issues. You have, for instance, Senator Mike Delf, who joined us a moment ago, on the other side, on something such as the Common Core standards. Again, these were decided by 46 governors, including Mitch Daniels. Who wins this fight in the end?
Well, I think that, as you heard with Senator Delf in the roundtable, the people should win and the parents should win. And I think that the message that David Harris was communicating as well was that, you know, the more choice that you give parents, the more that you empower the parents, the better it is for the children. I don't think that you would have much argument there either from the public school representatives that were on the roundtable as well.
All right, Ed, we have to leave it there, but thank you as always for your insight. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Lawmakers under News. And to learn more about Indiana's graduation rates and what you can do to help, visit wfyi.org/AmericanGraduate. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis. We're back again next week. Until then, take care.
This year marks the 50th anniversary of the Purdue Research Park. With four locations across Indiana, 200 companies, and more than 4,000 employees, we have much to celebrate.
Purdue Research Park has a $1.3 billion annual impact for Indiana.
Purdue Research Park, celebrating 50 years of innovation and job creation.